Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we zero in the beginning of the program on wetlands. Talk a little about World Wetlands Day, which is today, and some of the work of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. They've done a lot of wonderful work. And Katie Belfus has been a guest in the past with us on the show. Great to have her back. She's Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you here. And also great to have Tracy Hames with us as well. Tracy is, he is the newly appointed Executive Director of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. And congratulations and thanks for coming by.
Well, thank you. And thank you and good morning. Yes.
Well, great to have you both here. And this is World Wetlands Day. Now, you were telling me before the show how this day happened to be named World Wetlands Day, but let's repeat that again.
Sure. Well, people in Wisconsin think it's sort of funny that we have World Wetlands Day when all of our wetlands are buried in snow and cold of winter. But I'll tell you that the reason it's on February 2nd is that that was the day in 1971 that the original Ramsar Convention on Wetlands was signed. There was a meeting held in the city of Ramsar, Iran, in 1971. So February 2nd marks the anniversary day of the signing of that. And this year marks the 41 years, I should know, because that's my birthday, too. But the 41st year of that convention. So World Wetlands Day is celebrated around the world, and we're trying to do our part here by talking about wetlands with you.
Mm-hmm. And Tracy, the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, by the way, recently received a very prestigious award related to the 2012 Wetland Conservation Award for Education, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, this was a Ramsar Award. We're the first organization in the United States ever to receive this award, an international award, and it was for a lot of the work that Katie and the rest of the staff have been doing, promoting Wisconsin wetlands and trying to get some of them designated, the real important ones, as international wetlands. So Katie can talk a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, I'm sure. And you know what? Let's just back up and talk about what constitutes a wetlands and why we need to be concerned about it. And maybe you can start on that, Katie.
Sure. Well, there's a couple of important things that help you know when you have a wetland. One is whether there's water at or above the surface of the ground for all or part of the year. It's important to notice that all or part of the year, because a lot of our wetlands aren't wet year-round. They might only be wet for a certain part of the year, but they still play a really critical role. They still are wetlands. The other thing to look for is, do they have wet, water-loving plants that have special adaptations that allow them to live in wet areas, which can provide a challenge to other kinds of plants that don't have that special adaptation. And the soil type that's there as well is another important indicator.
And how much of Wisconsin is wetland? I know we've lost a lot of our wetlands here in the state.
We've lost almost 50% of our wetlands and are down to about 5 million acres out of the original 10. Much of that is from agricultural development. And as we've grown and matured, or more recently, development of cities and urban areas and recreational areas as well.
Yeah. And Tracy, why do we need to keep those wetlands that we have?
So we've lost half of them. So the half that are left are much more important now. And there's a lot of very important reasons that that we need wetlands. First one that everybody can think of is flood control. Every spring we have a lot of the white stuff on the ground, and it goes away pretty quickly. That water has to go somewhere. We know it goes downhill. Well, wetlands are on the landscape, usually at the lower portions of the landscape. When the water melts, when the snow melts, it goes into these wetland areas. If we lose those wetland areas, that water is still going to be there. It's still going to melt. Where's it going to go? So a big part of the wetlands is buffering those situations, keeping your houses from flooding, keeping roads from washing out when the waters come down, allowing the water to go somewhere. Other very important components of wetlands are charging the groundwater. A lot of our farming activity, you know, we're needing the precipitation and the groundwater resources to grow the crops. If we lose our wetlands, the land dries up, it's harder to grow our crops. Same with pastures, cattle pastures and things like that. Of course, the other thing that we all love is the wildlife habitat. Something like 75% of Wisconsin's wildlife species use wetlands for a portion of their life. We think of waterfowl, of course.
Sure.
Their babies are grown in the wetlands. They're dependent on those things. In the fall, they use it for migration. But songbirds, all kinds of little creepy crawly things like...
Lots of amphibians.
Frogs and salamanders and stuff. Someone asked me the other day, they said, well, what good are wetlands? They're just good for frogs and mosquitoes, aren't they? And I said, well, you're missing out on some other important things. They also grow wood ticks and leeches. but no, there is so many different uses of wetlands right now and importance to the landscape. And so we really want people to be aware of them, why they're important, and how they can contribute to the quality of life in the communities around Wisconsin.
You know, I want to give people a chance to join in and ask questions. I haven't given that number, so let me just do that right now. If you have a question for Katie Belfus or Tracy Hames, I hope you'll join in as we talk wetlands with them. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page, at The Larry Mehler Show, and you can post a question or a comment or even a photo there. We'd love to hear from you. So give us a call or shoot us a note on Facebook or email us. And we do actually have a Facebook question from Todd, who wonders if you could, what do you think of the changes in the wetland law that are going to affect 30% of non-federally protected wetlands in Wisconsin, and maybe you need to give us some of the background on this and comments on it.
Yeah. So there's some bills before state legislature right now trying to reform some of the wetland permitting processes. And what this means is if you're a developer and you want to do something in an area that may affect wetlands, you need to get a permit from the DNR. What this is doing is amending the rules on how that permit process occurs. We've been working pretty closely on this legislation right now. There's some good things that are coming out of it. There's some needed reform, and it's always good to revisit processes like this and make sure they're running efficiently. So we've supported those changes. Unfortunately, there's also some very fundamental changes in the permit process, according to the way the legislation's written right now, that we have some strong, strong concerns about. It will drastically change how wetlands are looked at in the permit process. Especially, it will reduce the disincentive to avoid wetlands in development. Mm. Oftentimes when people are looking around, I want to put a housing development in, I want to put an industrial park in or this or that, where am I going to site it? Where am I going to locate this operation? And if they see a wetland in the area, well, maybe not such a good place to go because it'll be difficult with the permit process. We feel this bill kind of removes that disincentive and may provide people to say, well, there's a wetland area right there. I think in this new legislation, I think maybe I could pull it off. Let's see if I can develop there. And it really worries us because oftentimes those wetlands, understanding that we've already lost half in the state, the wetlands that are left are that much more important. And oftentimes they're relatively less expensive than other lands in the area. So we're really nervous about promoting development in these areas.
Yeah, I can see why. Are we getting what's the status of that bill right now?
So currently it's gone through the Natural Resources Committee in the Assembly and in the Senate. We had helped put together some amendments to address our concerns to make this bill something that will protect the resources, the wetland resources of Wisconsin. All those amendments were voted down. So it's come through both committees at this point in a state that we feel is unacceptable. We still hold out hope. It hasn't gone to the floor yet in either the Assembly or the Senate. We hold out hope that this hopefully working with us and other conservation organizations and sportsmen's organizations, we can get some amendments in on this bill to fix it, to get it to protect the wetlands.
I think a tricky thing with legislation is there's the idea of what people want to create, and then there's the language that actually is the law. And I think everybody agrees at the table that we want to protect wetlands, we want to allow development where it's appropriate, and we want to try to minimize development in wetland areas. But what the actual words of legislation say and how that means they will be actually implemented if the law is passed as currently written, that's where the challenge is. And so we're just trying to sort that through right now. And one of the questions that's come up, if I can just take one more minute, Larry,
sure.
is mitigation is a word that has come up in this issue. It's recreating or restoring wetlands in areas where they've been lost, or improving the quality of a low quality wetland as sort of compensation for wetland fill that does occur. And this sounds like a really great idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're gonna fill this wetland over here, but we're gonna create a new one over here, and in fact, it's gonna be bigger. And that sounds wonderful to a lot of people, and is better than nothing. But I just want to make people aware that, for one, where that mitigation occurs, whether it happens in the same watershed, in the same area, does it provide the same functional services like clean water and flood abatement mm-hmm. that the wetland that you filled used to provide? And two, do we really know as humans yet how to do what Mother Nature has taken thousands of years to do? Our experience thus far, and there's a really interesting piece that came out and got some coverage, I think it was in the New York Times, where they've done a sort of metadata analysis of studies of restoration sites on the landscape, just to show that it takes a very, very long time for restored wetlands to achieve the same functional values as natural mm-hmm. wetlands. And we don't know how to do it for all kinds of wetlands. We know how to do shallow marshes pretty well, but show me anybody that can tell you they can restore or build a coniferous bog, and I'd like to meet that person. We just don't know how to do it yet. So it's a wonderful idea, and we need to keep working.
Katie Balifas, Outreach Program Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, and Tracy Hames, who is the newly appointed Executive Director of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, our guests today as we talk with them about our wetlands here in the state. This is World Wetlands Day, perfect time to talk about it. If you have questions or comments, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page and you can post there at the Larry Mueller Show. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Are you aware of the wetlands in your area? Do you know how to protect those wetlands? What concerns or questions might you have about wetlands? I hope you'll join in as we visit with Katie Balifas and Tracy Hames of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Again, the number 1-800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page as well. You can post there at the Larry Mueller Show. We would love to hear from you. Email from Chris in Madison, who wonders what functions are lost when wetlands are dominated by invasive plants like reed canary grass and hybrid cattails. Also, wetlands for much of Wisconsin and the rest of the country have been mapped and can be viewed on just as a side note, on the Fish and Wildlife Service National Wetlands Inventory web mapper. And I'm sure you folks know about that.
We do, and the DNR has a wetland mapping system as well. We can get that information to Judith. She can post on your Facebook page later.
Yeah, that's great. So what functions are lost if you get your wetland filled with the reed canary grass, for example, or hybrid cattails?
So,
Tracy?
Yeah, I've been addressing that issue a lot over the last couple of decades. Oftentimes what happens is we'll do something to a wetland that will harm it or disturb it in one way. Either we change the way the water is going in or coming out of the wetland, or we go in and disturb the ground. This causes oftentimes what we call non-native invasive species to come into our wetland. And what happens is these are species usually from another part of the world that have been brought into this country, into this region, and did not evolve here. In other words, we're bringing in a plant that doesn't have other checks and balances in the environment, keeping it in its proper place and in its proper numbers. So, you know, there aren't bugs to be eating the reed canary grass or other mm-hmm. things that keep it in check. So these things come into these areas and just take off. They outcompete all the other plants and push out a lot of wildlife species into these areas. It's a big loss of habitat. You get an area like coming in with hybrid cattail, and you'll lose all your open water aspects of your wetland. So there's no place even for a duck to land. So a duck's not going to use that wetland if it can't land anywhere. Other things it does is it increases, it changes the way the water works and the sediment capabilities of a wetland work. When you have all this vegetation in your wetland, the water flows into it, bringing sediments, and it dumps out that sediment, creating a lot of deposition of sediments and things like that. So incredibly important component of wetland management right now is dealing with invasive species.
So Tracy did a great job of talking about some of the negative impacts of invasive species, but I think one of the concerns is that people think, oh, that's a trashed wetland because it's full of invasive species, so it's no good. And that's true for some of the values like Tracy talked about, wetland, waterfowl habitat, for example, but even wetlands that have invasive species, we want to control them, but even when they have invasive species, they still provide important functions more so than might a filled, if that property were filled. So the fact that a wetland has invasive species doesn't mean it's worth, you can write it off. It's still important.
Gotcha. Let's go to the phones here. In Autumn in Green Bay, it is your turn. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes, I wondered if Wisconsin wetland policies, are we a role model for other states and other countries?
So how does our wetlands policy overall compared with other places?
We have for a long time been held up as the regional model for wetland protection and having strong regulations in place to protect our wetlands. Many states look at us and are envious at what we've had. And the work that we're trying to do on the current legislation is to continue that strong reputation because so much of our state's reputation is built on our fabulous natural resources. People come to vacate here and enjoy those, and we want to make sure those are protected.
Very important component of the landscape of Wisconsin, of course, and like Katie said, well-renowned nationwide for the policies, and that's why we're so concerned about this new legislation. We need to maintain that strong policy of protecting and maintaining our wetland resources.
Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. And actually, sort of in relation to that email, we have an email from Victoria who wonders, what can an individual do to stem the legislation that's proposed or to deal with the legislation that's proposed?
So currently, the best thing you can do is contact your legislator. Find out who's in your district, who are your legislators, and contact them on phone, through email, any way you can. You can also look on our website, wisconsinwetlands.org. We have a lot of material talking about the bill and some of the implications and some of our concerns and how this bill may be repaired to add the protection that it needs to, that we need to have in it.
There we go. Dan in Eagle River, let's turn to you now. Hi, Dan. Thank you for calling.
Hi, my question is, the Clean Water Act was part of it was struck down by the Supreme Court several years ago, and there was talk of changing the law so that the portion pertaining to wetlands would go back in. I'm wondering if they could give us an update on that.
I think what he's talking about is the isolated wetlands bill, which here in Wisconsin, we were the first state in the nation to replace those protections at the state level that were removed at the federal level. So the federal government no longer has jurisdiction over isolated wetlands, that is, wetlands that aren't connected to some sort of navigable waterway. We have those protections in Wisconsin here right now, although the legislation that we've been talking about this morning would could change that if it's not amended.
There you go. Thank you for calling. And Wayne in Wisconsin Rapids, on to you now. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Great, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind is that the wetland law changes that they're looking at is going to be more reflective of how things were back in the, I'd say, late 60s. And with that, one thing that people are not taking into consideration is the glitchy word of mitigation is that people don't understand the enormous amount of expense that would go into restoring wetlands or mitigating wetland repairs. So that would be my comment, is that people don't understand that it's cheaper to maintain what we got rather than try to recreate. Yeah. So with that, I'm done.
That's a great comment. Thanks for that. That is so true.
Yeah.
Well, and it actually ties into our upcoming Wetlands Conference, which is happening in 3 weeks now in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. Our keynote speaker for that conference is a man by the name of David Batker, who's with a group called Earth Economics. And he'll be speaking to our conference about the ways that we can actually put an economic value on our what he's calling natural capital, our mm-hmm. wetlands or other natural capital, because they provide services to us that have economic value. If we didn't have those services, if we didn't have that natural water cleansing or the natural flood abatement, we would have to engineer very, very costly systems to help deal with flood water, to help clean water, to help with all of these issues. So let's get those valuations involved very early in planning everywhere so that we, when we're looking at things, we're not just looking at natural capital as a free thing, but it, when we lose natural capital, it does have economic costs for us.
So that's one other speaker. Tell us a little bit more about sure. the conference.
This is our 17th annual Wetland Conference. We will be down in Lake Geneva. As I said, it's where we welcome anybody who's interested in wetlands to attend. It's a two-day event. We also offer conference field trips. There's four working groups this year. We have 30 poster sessions, more posters than we've ever had, and a full slate of concurrent presentations. Tracy Hames, our executive director here with us today, is going to be our banquet speaker, talking about the work that he's done for the last 22 years for the Yakima Nation out in central Washington. It provides a lot of really interesting connections to our work here in Wisconsin, so he'll tell us more about that. I can't wait to hear about it.
All right.
Yeah, it should be a fun talk.
And that banquet is open to anybody, even if you don't want to or are not able to attend the full conference. We would welcome you to come to the banquet.
And so people could go to your website, I assume.
Yep, right on our homepage, you'll see a link to the conference with all the information about the venue and registration and the like.
So the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, we even have a link on my Facebook page at the Larry Mehler Show as well. So go there, and it's what, 2 weeks from now,
February
is it?
22nd and 23rd yeah. okay. At the Grand Geneva Resort in Lake Geneva.
That was a nice place to have
it. It's a beautiful facility.
Yeah, very nice. All right, we have more callers here. By the way, there are some open lines. You can get on by calling in at 1-800-642-1234, and we'll get you on pretty quickly. Al in Vilas County, your turn. Hi, Al.
Hi. Thanks for the show. I have a question about impermeable surfaces. I own lake property here in Vilas County, and I have a lagoon that comes, it's attached to the lake, and directly across from the lagoon, my neighbor put in an asphalt driveway and an approach to his garage, 20 feet from my lagoon, and probably the same amount from the lake on the front part of his house. Anyway, I spoke with the zoning administrator here in Vilas County, and she told me that the Americans with Disabilities Act trumps the Impermeable Surfaces Act, so she allowed them, you know, after they put it in without a permit, she came out and fined them and gave them a permit, but she allowed them to put this driveway in because of access for the ambulance. Anyway, they're seasonal residents, and they merrily spend their time pressure washing. And our cabin's been in the family for 60 years, and we had frogs in the lagoon, and my grandkids love to catch them and play with them. Well, that's over, I guess, because of the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Hmm. Well, comment, Katie?
Well, it doesn't sound like it'll help you in this situation, but if you have other listeners who have a similar situation coming up, there are permeable pavers on the market these days, so that if you do have a situation where you need to put in a driveway, you can reduce the runoff from an impervious pavement by putting in some sort of permeable paver. In your case, that's not going to help. The driveway's already there. You might think about what the vegetation is between the driveway and the lagoon or the lake so that you can increase your buffer there to try to slow down that water flow and trap some more sediments there. It's hard to say without seeing the property.
Whether or not that'll work. But at least it's worth a try. Good luck, Al. Thank you very much for calling. We had an email from Gary who says, as an owner of approximately 30 acres of woodlands, I'm interested in learning more about your organization, membership, activities, and that sort of thing. So
Great, Gary. We welcome you as a member. We are a nonprofit organization. We are supported by contributions from individuals like, we hope, Gary and some of your other listeners. And Gary, I'll also let you know we have a wetland restoration handbook for Wisconsin landowners that if you have, sounds like you have existing wetlands, this particular handbook deals more with wetlands that have been developed for farming or other purposes, but it might have some interesting information in there in terms of managing your wetland. And I'd really like to talk to you, Gary, because one of the projects that Tracy and I are going to be working on in the next year or two is trying to work more directly with private landowners to figure out what your questions are in terms of how do you identify what you have, how do you know how to manage it, how do you need to do any restoration or deal with hydrology issues. We want to know more what those questions are from individual landowners. We don't have the capacity to work one-on-one with individual landowners, but if we can develop a program or work with partners like UW Extension to reach out to wetland landowners, that's something we're very interested in doing. We know that 75% of Wisconsin's existing wetlands today are in private ownership. So it's wonderful that the DNR protects so many wetlands, but we also need to really reach those private landowners and help them understand what a wonderful resource they are stewards of.
So Gary can get a hold of you probably just directly off the Facebook page.
Definitely. I'd be happy to talk with
you. Your website.
Yeah, super.
All right. Thanks for that. And Pat in Denmark, we turn to you next. Hi, Pat.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
I was just wondering, with this basically a lack of winter and snowpack cover this year, what kind of effect is this really going to have? I know it's just 1 year. Last year we had all that snow, which I assume helped the wetlands. But, you know, this year with virtually nothing, it seems like, I was just wondering what effect it's going to have, you know.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, good question. I would say don't get spring fever yet. Remember, it's only February 2nd. Still got a bit of winter to come. Anything can happen here. But, no, that's natural. I mean, there are wet years. There are dry years. One thing I like to remind people of about wetlands, are those areas that are not dry. They're not like uplands, and they're not wet like lakes. They're the area in between the dry and the always wet. So it's natural for wetlands to go through cycles. Some years they may be really wet. Other years they may be dry. And that's natural. And the vegetation actually in wetland situations depends on that not always being really wet, not always being really dry. Hmm. That's what makes wetland vegetation so unique and so special, is that it is always changing. And that's the great thing about wetlands. They are always changing. It's always something new there.
A Dane County farmer who worries about well drilling for new developments, will this dry up his stream there, you know, and could dry wetlands, I assume. Is there a way?
Well, I think we all need to be concerned about what's happening with our groundwater and how pumping for whatever purpose, wells or otherwise, will affect those. And we need to be looking at that because we depend on our groundwater for so very many things. As we talked about earlier, a lot of wetlands do help with groundwater recharge. And so making sure we've got wetlands in our communities that can help with that, you know, is really important.
Groundwater connections are really important. One of the tragedies of the isolated wetland rule was they said, well, this is an isolated wetland. It's not connected to navigable waters on the old Clean Water Act determination. Well, oftentimes they are connected through groundwater. There's some incredibly complex relationships between surface water and groundwater, and wetlands are right in the middle of that stuff. So it really is important. If you're doing some drilling, anything that's going on affecting groundwater could also drastically affect your wetlands and affect your lakes and rivers as well.
Let's turn to Jeff in Superior next. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, good morning. This is a great show. I love the fact that we're discussing one of the rich resources of Wisconsin because we're on a migratory bird pattern, you know, around Lake Superior. And I want to share with you that my grandfather and his parents, when they immigrated from Sweden back in 1890 or whatever, I eventually bought property here in Douglas County where in the 1950s, Eisenhower paid them not to farm it. So my grandpa bought the property when his parents passed, and he let it go back to nature. And there was a creek that went through. A gravel pit was built when they built Highway 53 because they used some of the gravel for the highway. And now it's a beaver pond where birds will come and go through, geese, ducks, so many different kinds of birds. And then we have deer, and there's bear on the property, and It's really only about 300 acres in Hawthorne Township, but it's become a really rich place for nature, and even the neighbors around it know it. But there's still like a prairie grass where the potatoes used to be grown, and the barn is still standing, but the house is gone. But without any kind of management at all, it just seems like nature has just taken it over and found a real balance for all the life that's there. There's blueberries growing, and, you know, there's many wildflowers in the spring and so many different species of trees. And
sounds idyllic to me, doesn't it?
Sounds like you're doing very good stewardship up on your property. Thank you for that.
Yeah, and it's something that just kind of happened. And there is a well on the property. One was dug, you know, so the water, the groundwater is pretty close to the surface, but the other one had a pump where you could, and I had the water tested at the Douglas County Extension Office or whatever, and the water is still good to drink right out of the ground. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. Yeah.
Well, one of the benefits of being up there in the Great North is that there still is so much fabulous nature there that nature can heal herself in a much easier way than when you get into areas where if you've got an isolated, beautiful wetland habitat in the midst of a lot of development, it gets to be much harder for that that healing to happen. It's not impossible, but it needs a little bit more encouragement, a little more management from humans.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the family, we're pretty proud that my grandpa had the wisdom to see this long term. Because it's been 100 years in the family, and it's really shown.
I have hope for wetlands in Wisconsin because of people like you who clearly have such a love for the resource, and it's such an important part of who you are as a person. I keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. That sounds like a place I'd like. Well, probably most of us would like to visit. You know, that just sounds wonderful when you kind of do it the right way. Things turn out, can turn out really well. And this has been 100 years on that one property. James and Stevens Point, your turn. Hi.
Hi. I just looked up an old magazine. I remember reading this. It's Orion Magazine, 2007. And it's an article by Winona LaDuc, if you recall who she was. She ran with Ralph Nader. Mm-hmm. Years ago, but she points out the name of her article is Wild Rice Really Wild? And she points out that because wild rice is a wetland crop, and she points out that the University of Minnesota has now patented all of the wild rice that that grows in Minnesota. So in other words, the Ojibwe Indians need to get permission from the University of Minnesota to reap the crops that we would think is natural to them. And I didn't know if you were aware of that or not.
I was not aware of that. I took Winona out on some of, back when I worked with the Yakima Nation in Washington State, she visited some of our wetland properties out on the reservation out there, so I know her. And the important thing to consider here, you're talking about management and the resources like that. Wetlands, you know, we talked about wetland functions. Wetland have a lot of very important functions for human use, and especially when you're looking at traditional cultures and tribal folks. This is a real strong part of their tradition, a part of their history. The wild rice is integral to the culture, and they will tell you that they have to harvest the wild rice to survive. If they don't do it, they will die inside. And it's the same with tribes throughout the nation right now. And thinking about management, thinking about wetlands, you know, you look at, well, we want to leave a place natural, but the tribes have been managing these resources for thousands of years here. They've been manipulating these areas to produce the wild rice and the other traditional resources that they need. So management is a long-standing, it's not a bad word. Look at the wetland resources we have. How can they provide the functions and the benefits that we desire?
And one really exciting announcement, if I can connect it to wild rice, is the largest remaining wild rice bed in Lake Superior is owned by the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. It's the Kakagan and Bad River Sloughs. And a very exciting thing that has happened recently is that the tribe nominated that for designation as a Ramsar Wetland of International Importance. And in December, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service did, in fact, designate that site as a Wetland of International Importance. So we're awaiting the official listing on the International Ramsar list, but we expect that to come anytime. It's the first tribally owned Wetland of International Importance in the United States.
And what does that mean to be named that?
Well, it's a special designation. Every site that gets that designation has to satisfy at least one of nine very specific criteria with regards to the habitat that's provided by that site, the biodiversity or water birds or whatnot. There's a number of different criteria. And so the nominee has to provide the defense for why that site qualifies. And then it has to go through a very official review process. The Wisconsin Wetlands Association aided the tribe in their nomination, preparing those materials. There have to be a letter from the local elected official, the member of Congress. And so it's a very official nomination package. And it becomes part of a very elite group of sites across the globe that are the Wetlands of International Importance. These are globally significant wetlands.
And then they will be protected?
Well, there's no this designation has no regulatory power. It's a social protection, if you will. Mm-hmm. It is a large gold star on for the site, and we hope it'll help them with fundraising and protection in their work. Although it does not in itself protect it, we do have two other Ramsar Wetlands of International Importance in Wisconsin: the Horicon Marsh and the Upper Mississippi River Marshes.
And that's very, very interesting. And I wanted to go back to the conference again, because that's something we touched on it, but I'd like to touch on it again and let people know how
sure.
they can participate or if they...
Yeah. Well, we welcome anybody, and we do have rates. If you can just come for one day or the other, we can do that for you. And we have a lot of students attending and presenting papers. We have... a special session that we're really excited about this year, given the location of the conference in Illinois, right across the border, or in Lake Geneva, right across the border from our friends in Illinois. We're having a session that we're calling Biologists Without Borders that'll highlight projects and initiatives that are helping protect nature and wetlands, in this case, across our human political boundaries, because nature knows no such boundaries.
Sure.
We've put those there. But how are people working, how are different initiatives working across those boundaries for the betterment of nature? So we'll have students, student presenters from a number of universities and colleges in the area. We'll be talking about wetland wildlife. We'll be talking about wetland management, strategies for wetlands and how they help with stormwater management, all kinds of exciting topics.
And that's February 22nd and 23rd.
That's correct.
And you could do one or the other or both?
You can do one or the other or both. And if you can't come during the day, we'd love to have you at the banquet. You can come hear more from Tracy Hames.
Well, I tell you what, I want to thank you both, Tracy and Katie, for being with us today. It's been a real pleasure, and I hope you'll come back.
You call us anytime you need a show, Jake. We'll come right in.
We're not too far away.
It's always our pleasure.
No, I know. You're not far away. That's a good thing. Katie Valvis is the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, and Tracy Hames is the newly appointed Executive Director of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. I hope you'll take a look at the association itself. I know we had some questions from people who are wondering, well, how might I get involved in the association? Well, they have a website, and we have a link to that website on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And as I'm looking at that page right now, I see Linda, one of our listeners, shot us a nice photo of a little creek in their watershed wetland. They call it Honey Creek, our Honey Creek watershed wetland. Pretty picture to look at. So take a look at that on our Facebook page. Great to have them along, and we will have them back again, and we'll talk some more about our wetlands. I'm going to switch gears now and talk about what happens when a wife becomes her husband's primary caregiver because of illness. What does it mean for them as a couple and as individuals? Dr. Diana Denholm has some great insights to share, and she's coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.